The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
It is time for another Dark Side of the Pooch. It runs every single Monday through Friday now, 5 days a week, brought to you by our good friends at Ed's Pet World down there in Homewood. They've been open for nearly 50 years, and right now Seth is getting after not only the pets, but he's also getting after the toys. Unopened toys, collectibles, watches, Star Wars stuff, man. If you get on Ed's Pet World, you're not only going to see a plethora of exotic pets, chinchillas, ferrets, bearded dragons, birds that sing, all kinds of killer fish. They all tarantulas. They've got caiman alligators. They got it all down there, but also some great toys. He travels the country looking for the best toys. If you want to buy, sell, or trade, check out Ed's Pet World, Ed's Pet World, for everything you need when it comes to your exotic pets and or your toys. He is Dr. Rab Stewart. What's up there, dog?
Bow, wow, wow, yippee-o, yippee-o.
Yeah. What is going on, my friend? Everything good?
Yeah, all good, man.
All right, we're going to talk some about dog nails. We got some emotional support animal news. We'll talk about intestinal parasites. I did see an interesting story that came out through AL.com. Someone asked the question, what animals can you not own as a pet in the state of Alabama? Would you like to take a stab at any of these?
Oh man, this is gonna be hilarious. You cannot own a bobcat.
You cannot own a bobcat. If you saw a bobcat, it's actually not on the list, but it is considered a wild species. So you're correct. The bobcat's on there. And I asked this because I posted a picture of my daughter holding a deer, which I sent you earlier today.
Oh, so cool. I didn't have a chance to click on because it was a video and I didn't get a chance to click on it before our show today.
Yeah.
But what a cool picture.
Baby deer comes out of a street, comes up to the car. It's still wet. I thought it had gotten hit by a car because it couldn't stand. It was because it was a newborn. And so we held it for a few minutes and I gave it back to mama. But you cannot have pet deer. I know people in the state do have pet deer. I'm not talking about like feeding them at nighttime, you know, in your backyard. I'm like actually having pet deer, like they actually sleep at the bottom of your bed. You cannot have a pet mongoose. You cannot have a pet jackrabbit, deer, elk, fox, walking catfish, piranha. You cannot have coyotes, skunks, wild turkeys, and you cannot have raccoons from outside the state. Inside the state, I guess you could have a pet raccoon. And I saw another story where a dude had his pet possum. He had a possum for like 4 years. Living in his house, and he raised it from a baby, and wildlife came and took his possum away. So I'm like, whatever.
Oh, I will sometimes have the occasional wild turkey in my house.
Really?
But yeah, it's the liquid kind.
Yeah. So talk about that, because obviously you're a veterinarian. You've told your giraffe story. You've treated many, many different animals. I know you only treat dogs and cats now, and we've gone through the whole process of what if I fell into a bird or something that you know, you're right down the street, you could certainly take it in and take a look at it, but you're not supposed to serve those types of animals because they're not really pets. But what are some of the strangest pets you've heard of? And I've always said this, you can take the cat out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the cat.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
No doubt.
We had an employee that was a great employee. But she had a career change, and she had some spiders for pets. She had a tarantula, and then she had some other kind of weird spider. I don't remember what it was. But I've always thought spiders are, you know, that's kind of stepping out there. Those are interesting pets to have.
Yeah.
Reptiles are always interesting, and there's nothing wrong with having these as pets. So I don't want anybody to, you know, get me wrong, but those are just things that are off the beaten path. My brother-in-law, he grew up with snakes. So I think that those reptiles and snakes are really interesting. But then you mentioned the giraffe, you know, those are really interesting. And you're kind of getting in a little bit with farm animals, but, I've known people that have had bison, you know, like yep. Bison farms. Mm-hmm. When I spent a little bit of time in Montana, and, bison, are kind of big up there. So that's really cool.
Where would you take an emu or a llama if you had a sick llama or a sick emu? Because I know people have emu farms around here, and I know you can actually have mm-hmm. a llama. Where would you yeah. take something like that? Would you take care of that?
Well, I'm not really well versed in that, but depending on what part of the state they're in, so that would be considered a ruminant And so they're your best bet is going to be to talk to somebody who does cattle work. But when we were in vet school, you had a couple of, you know, you had small animal and you had large animal, and large animal was basically split up into two different kind of curriculums. You had equine, which is horses, and then you had other large animals, which would be ruminants. So cows and goats and sheep and alpacas and llamas.
Yeah.
So Auburn has a lot of great ruminant practitioners, and then also anybody in the state who does cows might be able to help with the alpacas and emus.
All right. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, of course, on Facebook at the Rossbridge Vet, right there on Twitter. And, of course, you can give them a call, 205-208-0301, 208-0301. They're great. As a matter of fact, I always say I don't have anyone on the show unless I use their services. I saw you on Friday. I felt kind of bad as a pet owner because I hadn't brought my Australian Shepherd Rainer in a couple of years. So he was behind on some vaccinations and some rabies stuff like that. And we found an intestinal parasite, which kind of freaked me out at first. And you were like, it's no big deal. He just got into something. How do dogs get intestinal parasites?
They eat them on the ground. So they're either just laying there because maybe a dog has pooped there,
yeah,
but the poop's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the most likely way that they get those. Hookworms are really interesting. So they can be eaten, but they can also burrow underneath the skin.
Ew.
So they can get them by burrowing under the dog's feet, like into the skin.
Ugh.
Or they can be ingested. And when they go through the skin, the way that they make it, you know, into the, intestines, is they're actually kind of coughed up and then swallowed. And that's where they latch into the intestines.
That's
so
disgusting.
Hookworms are really interesting. They have a very interesting life cycle.
So is a parasite a hookworm? Or are we talking about two different things?
A hookworm is a parasite. You know, okay. anything that lives on or in your body, a flea is a parasite, a tick is a parasite.
And a hookworm is different than a heartworm, correct?
Yeah. So a hookworm is an intestinal parasite. A heartworm is a heart parasite. It lives in the heart. It also starts, it burrows through the skin because it's injected underneath the skin by a mosquito. The larva for heartworms live in the mouth parts of the mosquito.
Mm-hmm.
And so once those are injected, they migrate to the heart and they develop as they migrate and they finish their development in the heart.
That's absolutely disgusting, but I knew you'd know about it. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We get some killer emails every single week. Mike in Prattville, along with those same lines, said that he recently saw a story about a rabid fox who attacked a person in Autauga County. He wanted to know more about rabies. What can get rabies? How dangerous is it if you get bitten by some of the rabies? And how important it is that you kill the animal that has rabies, or at least find it to find out if it has rabies?
All that stuff is really important. Rabies can kill people. And once it gets to, and animals, of course, and once it gets to a certain level of development, there's no turning back. It cannot be cured. The best thing to do is if you're bitten by an animal, especially a wild animal, is to try to kill it. Don't get hurt though, but the only way to know, well, let me take a step back there. Killing the animal that bites you might not be let's assume it has rabies. Let's do that. All right. Let's assume that you are bitten by a rabid animal. Okay. The only way to know if the animal has rabies is to kill it and submit the brain for testing to a diagnostic lab. Because the virus, you have to have brain tissue to detect the virus. Okay. So don't go killing anything that bites you. let's make the assumption that it does have rabies. That's how you would figure out if it has it or not. If you feel like you've been bitten by a rabid animal and there's no way to know if it's rabid, the best thing to do is just go to your doctor, and talk to them about the possibility of that animal having rabies. And then they can help direct you on if you should, have the post-exposure vaccines. Probably in most cases, it's safer just to do the post-exposure vaccines because you don't want to sit and wait. I mean, once symptoms of rabies develop, it's too late.
Aren't those the ones that are extremely painful? Ozzy Osbourne went through them right after he bit off the head off the bat, and then.
I think that they're different now. I don't think I've never had to have them because I've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
So I've never had to have the post-exposure vaccines. I mean, the pre-exposure vaccines are way different than the post-exposure, but I think the post-exposures are different now. I think back in the day it was crazy. Like you had to have like a certain number of shots in your, like in your abdomen or like in your abdominal tissue. I don't think that's the case anymore, but that's more of a human doctor question than a animal doctor question.
Are all veterinarians vaccinated for rabies?
They made all of us, unless you have some sort of, you know, there's an exception to every rule, but I can't say, you know, every single person has to be vaccinated for rabies once you get into vet school.
Yeah.
But I remember that was something that we did very early on, definitely before we handled any animals. They lined us all up in like the student affairs building, and they went through and vaccinated all of us.
See, and it was crazy because I'm taking my dog to get shaved tomorrow, my Australian Shepherd, because he is just shedding. Like I've never seen a dog shed like this dog is shedding right now. And he never shedded until about 2 years ago. So I don't know if it's, I don't know what's going on. He's stressing. I don't know what it is. But obviously in order to get him groomed, they need to have all of the vaccine records. And so that's why I came to see you. So it made me do a good thing there by doing that as well. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can hear the show 5 days a week right here on Tony Curry Radio on TKR First Run Shows. You can also go to Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just look up Tony Curry podcast, Audio Boom, iHeart, wherever your podcasts are on. We're on every stinking platform out there. You will find, look for Dark Side of the Pooch. It's a fantastic show and we hope you love it. Some more emails here. Stacy in Gatlinburg says, what's the best way to remove a tick from your pet? I've always, maybe this is a myth busted here, but I was always heard that you could take the body off, but if you don't get the head out, it'll grow back. Is that true?
I wish that were true.
Isn't that cool? where in the hell did we hear that? Because we used to have to take matches, and I mean, it was nasty.
If you don't get the head out, then that can just continue to be a source to transmit a tick-borne illness, because these bacteria that cause things like Ehrlichia and Lyme's disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, you know, those bacteria, they are passed to you through the tick's mouth parts. So the longer the mouth part is in your skin, there's a greater chance that if the tick has one of these bacteria, that it will be transmitted to you. So that's why it's so important to get the head out. I mean, it's not like a, you know, a life or death situation if you don't get the head out.
Yeah.
But it's just preferable that you do, because not all ticks are going to spread these bacteria, these rickettsial diseases to you, because not all of them will have it. It's not uncommon for them to have it. The best way to get a tick off is to use something called a tick spoon. And I'm sure that you can get them, I mean, at Amazon or pet stores or anywhere. We have a bunch of them at our office that, one of our vendors, they give us a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So it looks like a spoon. It's smaller, of course, and it has a really deep kind of cup to it.
Uh-huh.
And it has a very narrow V notched out of the front of the spoon. And you hook the tick, you get the front of the spoon flush with the dog's skin, and you get that tick inside that narrow V, mm-hmm. and you just kind of keep putting pressure on it, and it just pops it out perfectly.
What's the biggest tick you've ever seen?
They
get pretty big.
one of the biggest ticks I've ever seen was on my son's head when he came home from camp.
Yeah.
I've seen them, you know, probably as wide as my index finger, not as long as my index finger, but about as wide as my index finger. So that's a good, you know, maybe centimeter and a half or so.
I told you about the one I had last summer.
Yeah.
That got in my pants. I had one on my left testicle and I was like, and I was scratching it because I thought it was like a chigger bite. I thought it was a mosquito bite. And I hit it for like, and I take 2 showers a day. And I guess I didn't look far enough down there. And I looked down and I thought it was, you know, I thought it had, my blood had coagulated. And I thought maybe it was a scab. And it was, I had a tick on my little Anthony. It horrified me. It was not good.
So freaky when you find a tick.
I was like, you don't feel them. I mean, I've had one on the back of my leg on a vein and I didn't feel it for like a couple of days. It's just bizarre you'd have something that big on the back of your leg. All right, info at TonyCurryRadio.net, TKR, download the TKR app. Thanks to the tens of thousands of folks who've already gotten it done, and they listen to Dark Side of the Pooch every single week. We have a great listening audience, and of course, you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify everywhere, Dark Side of the Pooch. Don in Birmingham wants to know, how short and how often should I cut my dog's nails? That's one thing that people don't really like to do. If you do it regularly, it's no big deal. But if you don't know what you're doing, it can get a little cramped. And if you cut them too short, they can bleed. So how short should you cut nails and how often?
It's easy to tell on a dog that has clear nails because they're a lot like our nails. You can see the white and you can see the end of the white. So if your dog has clear nails, it's just like cutting your own nails. Mm-hmm. For a dog that has dark colored nails, you want to cut them so that they don't bleed. That's the best I can tell you.
Yeah.
And the way that you try to avoid that is you just take a little bit off at a time. Yeah. And when we cut dark colored nails, once you feel comfortable with how much you're taking off, then you just try to take the same amount off with every nail.
Yeah.
And I tell people that if we're trimming a dog, if we're trimming their nails and they're dark colored nails, I mean, it's pretty likely that we're going to get one too short. And when we get that one too short, we know that, okay, I took, just for example, I took 3 millimeters off that one. Mm-hmm. So the next one I need to take less than 3.
And so, they'll let you know too.
they'll let you know. Because it's painful.
This is interesting. So Rainer's got both clear and dark nails. So what constitutes, what makes a nail dark and what makes one clear?
It's just the pigmentation. It's just, I mean, when you have a dog that has various pigments on their skin, then the chances of them having, you know, multiple nails that are different colors is possible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, and this isn't like tried and true, but for example, Weimaraners, I saw, and that's why this is fresh in my mind. We saw a Weimaraner this morning, and, that dog is a uniform color.
Yeah.
They're grayish, bluish, depending on the type. All of their nails are clear. Now my own personal dog, he's kind of fawn. You know, he's brown and he has black tips.
Yeah.
And so he has some dark nails, he has some light nails.
That's very interesting.
So it has to do with the pigment. And if you have a dog that has some clear nails and some dark nails, then you can use the however long the quicks are on the clear nails, that's probably how long they're going to be on the dark nails.
Yeah.
So just try to take the same amount off.
So our director of operations, James Michael Keats, I know he brought his dog in on Friday as well. He's got a new Australian Shepherd. I guess it's about 16 weeks old, something like that, or 14 weeks old, something like that. And he was telling me he needed to take it to Dr. Rab within 3 days of his purchase because it's super important that the animal obviously is taken care of. And he got it from a Class A breeder, which a Class A is a person that is allowed to sell breeded animals. So Teresa in Baton Rouge recently bought a pup from a Class A individual. And when she got the dog, she didn't get to the vet within 3 days and found out that the dog was extremely lethargic and it had parvo. She went back to the breeder to get her money back and he would not give her money back because it was beyond 3 days. I know there's some lemon laws when it comes to animals in some states. I don't know what we have here in Alabama. Do you know any of those laws and what should she have done and what can you do to ensure that when you get a puppy from somebody that if it gets sick and dies, you can get your money back?
I don't know what those laws are either. And it's kind of like the breeder can have their own requirements, you know?
Yeah.
And they can have their own guarantees. They can do whatever they want and they can put it in the contract. And if you've signed the contract, then you have no recourse because, you know, they can make the rules, you know, just like we can make the rules at our practice. If you want to board your dog with us, it has to be up to date on certain vaccines and be free of parasites.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if people don't like those kind of stipulations, then they can, you know, find another breeder.
Yeah.
But it's pretty common to have a, you know, a period, a grace period. Whereas if you get your pet seen, you know, within this time frame, if they do find, you know, certain diseases or maybe all diseases or whatever the breeder has decided to include, you know, then if there's something that can be done, the breeder may take the pet back, or the breeder may decide to pay for the treatment, or, you know, whatever. That's all in the contract. But I mean, unfortunately, I think that if the person who purchased the dog did not adhere to what the contract said, I don't think they have any action they can take.
See, and this is interesting because this has happened to us twice. My ex-father-in-law got a dog from a breeder down here in Alabama, and the dog died once he got it back to Illinois and at Parvo. And then, of course, I brought in a puppy into you that we got from a different breeder that also got Parvo. How often does that happen? If you get a dog from a, and I say a well-known breeder, but if someone's got a Class A and you're getting paperwork, that's kind of rare, is it not? Or does that say something about the breeder if you get a dog from it and it's not healthy?
If a breeder gets Parvo in their facility,
it takes them all out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it can. The parvovirus, and, you know, I could probably look this up and tell you exactly, but off the top of my head, I don't know. It can live in the environment for a while. You know, it can, especially if there's fecal matter, it can live in that for a while.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not just talking days. I'm not just talking weeks. So if they've got multiple, you know, if their breeding stock doesn't just consist of two dogs and they're churning out dogs, I mean, it's just, you know, one parvo case is going to lead to another and another and another. So we don't see a lot of parvo where we are. I mean, we have seen, you know, a few cases. It's probably just has to do with being a little lucky, you know, seeing puppies that come from breeders where parvo is not in the, you know, breeding facility or, you know, where the breeding stock live. But once you get that virus in a facility, you know, it can be tough to get out. So
how do you get it out? I mean,
you can clean it. You can kill it. You know, you have to get all the organic material, you know, hair, poop, urine, you know, all that stuff has to be physically removed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can use, like 4-to-1 bleach will kill it.
Yeah.
You know, 4-to-1 water to bleach. But if you're just taking that diluted bleach and you're just pouring it on the organic material,
yeah,
it's not going to kill the virus.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to physically remove that stuff, you know, hands and knees scrubbing, and then you have to disinfect the area. And then if you do have a parvo positive dog, you have to, you know, if they're throwing up and having diarrhea, you just have to do it all over again, get the physical stuff out of there, and then decontaminate it with the cleaner.
According to AKC.org, it can last parvo at least 1 month indoors, outdoors up to a year. So
that's what I'm saying. It's not just days. It's not just weeks.
So again, if your dog has had its parvo shots when it was a pup, can it go into a yard that's been infected by parvo? Will it be okay?
It would be really unlikely that a dog die from parvo if they're vaccinated for it. I mean, really unlikely. And I mean, it would be pretty unlikely that they would even get any symptoms from it.
Okay. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, of course, on Facebook. Follow them and get after it. And I take all my pets there, and everyone here at Tony Curry Radio does the same thing. It is, of course, 205-208-0301. They're great for boarding, healthcare, whatever. I took my dog in on Friday. It was great. Joe in Rainbow City wants to know, what's the differences between service animals and emotional support pets, and how do you get qualified for each?
Service animals.
And I bring this up, by the way, because school is starting again, and there has been a huge uptick at the University of Alabama with people that want emotional support animals. And obviously you're not allowed to have animals in dorms. And so a lot of people are like, I want to bring my pet with me because they've been out of school for a couple of years. They've been going virtually and everything because of COVID and they're freaking out. But they're saying roughly 15% of new students going into the University of Alabama want an emotional support animal. How does it get qualified?
I really don't know the answer to this. I've never tried. I've never had either an emotional support or a service animal. So, you know, I'm not the authority on this. I would make a guess and say that a service animal, it's probably going to have a little more documentation and a little more training than an emotional support animal. When I think of a service animal, I think of a pet. Something for the blind, you know, like a seeing eye dog, or as an emotional support animal is going to be for, you know, something that's, a little different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think the emotional support thing, I think you actually have to have a therapist, a registered therapist that you're seeing that says this person is better off having that. And obviously a lot of people would wonder why, but cortisol obviously is the stress hormone. And they've done studies to find out that when people are around their pet cats and dogs, that their cortisol level is much lower and they're not so stressed out. So it certainly makes sense. And, you know, I would think that you probably see this a lot in first-year students, like I just said with the University of Alabama, because people have been living at home their entire lives. They've had animals and pets their entire life, and all of a sudden they don't have that lap dog to you know, calm things down a little bit. And I think that would be incredibly beneficial for a lot of people, right?
Hey, Tony, the office is calling me.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of paused there for a second.
That's fine.
So I'm gonna have to see what's going on.
No, that's good. And you know what? You know what? We can end it right now because we're up against 30 minutes. That's perfect. So go do your thing.
Okay.
I love you. I'll handle it from here. See, that's the kind of guy I'm talking about. Right in the middle. He's like, I got to go, man. I love that. Hey, I appreciate you, man. Take care of yourself. And I love you.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
We'll talk next week. There he is, Dr. Rab Stewart. I mean, right in the middle of a show. That's never happened. The office is calling. He's like, I got to go, man. I got customers. I got to take care of business. I love that. I love that. Now, if he had done it 10 minutes ago, I would have kept his ass on there a little longer. Dark Side of the Pooch. It runs every single Monday through Friday. It's unbelievable because this show is, it deserves to be played 5 days a week, right? And it runs every single day, Monday through Friday, like all of our shows, Adapt or Perish, Dark Side of the Pooch, Mission Minded. The only show that doesn't run every single day of the week is Live Wire Wednesday because it's got Wednesday in its title. So it runs at 8 o'clock, of course, our AC/DC. And of course, we also do our One in Rome with Stuart Rome. We have Need to Know with Kip Kiefer that runs every single day. We have Blues Almighty and we have the Damon Johnson Show. We have a brand new show called Wanna Bet. It's going to be starting on August 26th. Live from Las Vegas, talking about football picks with Kip Kiefer. We have an LPOD show we're going to be doing and a Wide Awake Wake show. So lots of great stuff. And of course, our show here, Dark Side of the Pooch, is brought to you by the wonderful folks at Ed's Pet World. I was down there on Friday, right after I left the vet, got a couple suckerfish, got me a parrotfish, saw Angie down there. Man, if you haven't been to Ed's Pet World in a while, you need to go down there and check it out. They redid the streets down there in Homewood. Parking is super, super easy. You slide right in, you slide right out. They've got all kinds of exotic pets, everything from chinchillas to ferrets to rabbits to parrots that will sing to you. They've got rats, they got mice, they got tarantulas, they got alligators, they got water turtles, they got it all. Plus, Seth was not there on Friday because he was somewhere in Kansas City or somewhere looking at toys at a toy store. The guy's got more collectibles down there. It's unbelievable. If you're looking for that hard-to-find collectible toy still in the box, Star Wars, watches, whatever, check out Seth. His toy closet is full. His pet closet is full, and he gets after it. We're so happy to have Ed's Pet World on as a proud sponsor of Dark Side of the Pooch. We do it live every single week. Make sure you listen to it right here on Tony Curry Radio and also wherever you get your podcast, Dark Side of the Pooch with Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.